This is Central Time. I'm Lee Rayburn, and three scientists were awarded the Nobel Prize for their work in quantum physics this week, specifically something called quantum entanglement. Let me see if I can explain. Let's say you have two coins, and you flip two coins, and that when one coin is heads, the other coin's always going to be tails, and the other way around as well, no matter what. That's the basic idea of quantum entanglement, as I understand it, except that instead of coins, it's tiny particles like electrons and photons. So let's say now you have one coin, and your friend who lives all the way, in Ohio, has another one. If these coins are quantum entangled, the distance between them doesn't matter. When you flip your coin, one side will be heads, and the other will be tails. But this gets crazier still. If you decide to change the result without telling your friend all the way over there in Ohio, say you got heads, then changed it to tails, well, your friend's coin over in Ohio will still be the opposite. How does that work? Of course, this doesn't happen with coin flips, but it does evidently happen with subatomic particles. So here to help us understand it all is Shimon Kolkowitz, Associate Professor of Physics at UW-Madison. He's an experimental quantum scientist who studies practical applications of quantum mechanics. Shimon, welcome to Central Time.
Thanks, Lee. It's great to be here.
Yeah, and how would you explain quantum entanglement briefly now that it's been at least acknowledged by the Nobel Prize?
Yeah, well, I think you did a great job, actually. Basically, the idea is that in quantum mechanics, which, as you said, governs things on very small scales, things like electrons, atoms, and the quantized units of light that we call photons, sometimes you can have a situation where you can't separate out the states of two different particles. So as you said, if you replace your coins in your analogy with two electrons, you might have two electrons where their states or their positions might actually be fundamentally intertwined such that you can't separate them. You can't talk about them individually anymore. And what that means, as you said, is if you take them and put them in two different places and you start messing around with one, it actually seems to impact the other one instantaneously. And that was something that really bothered Albert Einstein, for example, and he called it spooky action at a distance.
And you could understand why it would confuse Einstein, because everything I knew about his physics comes from high school, and we didn't know any of this. In fact, you had to be close to something in order to have an effect on it, right?
Yeah, that's right. That's a principle called locality. And usually in most areas of physics, we like to think that the physics that we're studying in that, you know, of that particular object, say that particle, is only determined by the stuff that it's right around it. And it always takes the speed of light for something else to impact it. So the further away you get, you know, the longer it should take for some change over somewhere far away to impact your particle. But in quantum mechanics, that just turns out not to be true. And that's actually what the Nobel Prize was given for, was actually really proving that that's not really how things work in quantum mechanics.
Yeah, and that was my next question, Shimon, is how much of this is theoretical, how much is practical, and how much of this is so brand new that we just don't know exactly what we're dealing with yet?
Well, that's a really great question. So we're really right now at about the 100-year mark for quantum mechanics. So we've understood most of quantum mechanics for about 100 years now. But it's very weird. It's very counterintuitive, even to people who study it every day, like myself. It's just totally different from our everyday experiences. And unfortunately, also, you know, we live in a very, what we call classical. We distinguish between quantum and classical. We live in a classical world. We use language that we've developed as kind of classical beings. And so it's actually pretty hard, as you can tell, even as we try to discuss it, to talk about the effects of quantum physics, because it's not something that we're used to, and it's so counterintuitive. Having said that, you know, what's remarkable is people like Einstein, you know, Einstein was really good at coming up with thought experiments. And he proposed this experiment, exactly like what you said, of taking two particles and pointed out that in quantum mechanics, they can be entangled, their states can be intertwined, and putting them on opposite ends of, say, the universe, and then doing this experiment. And he was trying to say, this can't be right. There must be something wrong with quantum mechanics. It must not be complete. That was basically his argument. And John Stuart Bell, who was a scientist at CERN in Europe, actually, but who happened to be visiting the University of Wisconsin on a kind of sabbatical when he wrote this paper, wrote a paper in 1964 showing mathematically that if you assume that quantum mechanics is missing something, you'll get a fundamentally different answer from doing certain kinds of experiments, kind of like the coin flipping experiments you were describing, than you would if quantum mechanics is correct. And even then, people thought, including Bell, this was kind of just an abstraction. It was a sort of a mathematical way to try to think about the different formulations and understand these things. But then the three scientists who just won the Nobel Prize, starting with John Clauser, working with a grad student, Stuart Friedman, in 1972, actually did the experiments. And sure enough, they showed that the results are consistent with quantum mechanics and not with any other theory, not with any theory where quantum mechanics is somehow missing something or where locality is preserved. So it's really reality, believe it or not.
Which is hard to believe when you've developed a Cartesian map of the world and you have time and space as Einstein linked the two. But now you've got spooky action at a distance, as Einstein called it. So what are the practical applications here, Shimon Kolkowitz? And let's start with what you're working on.
Oh, well, yeah, thanks a lot. So there are real practical applications. And, you know, what I work on is something called quantum sensing. We're trying to use these quantum systems and these kinds of effects like entanglement, superposition, the idea that particles can be in two different states or two different places at the same time to make really sensitive and precise measurement devices, things like clocks, which I work on, that are turn out to be surprisingly important. For example, some of your listeners may or may not know that the GPS network, the way that you get instructions on your phone, actually relies on very precise atomic clocks, which are already a kind of quantum technology. We're trying to use some of these even stranger aspects of quantum mechanics, like entanglement, to make clocks even better. And I will say that when people did these original experiments, people like Clauser and Alain Aspect and Anton Zeilinger, they initially were just trying to answer questions about the universe. But now part of the reason why I think they're being recognized for the Nobel Prize is we're on the verge of all of these new technologies based off of these discoveries and based off of these techniques. So things that people thought were really esoteric and academic and almost thought experiments have now turned into technological realities that are starting to change the world.
Technological realities. Shimon Kolkowitz, as it starts to change the world, how could this change for me? What would what could we see in our lifetimes that would be the revolutionary technology that we have yet to even imagine?
Well, that's a hard question to you know, prognosticate or answer. I mean, there's a lot of different things. So quantum technologies like quantum computers that can solve problems that all the computers we have currently, they don't really exist yet, but they're on the verge of becoming a reality. We think they could help with things like drug development, with developing new materials with properties that we can't even predict or haven't thought of yet. The kinds of sensors that I work on can help with autonomous vehicles, navigation, even with things like maybe predicting whether a volcano is going to erupt. So there is a huge range of different areas where these technologies will start to have an impact, and in some cases are already starting to have impact.
Yeah, so how does it move from theoretical to practical? What's that, and from your perspective, Shimon, what's that look like?
Well, it looks like doing experiments in labs, the kinds of experiments that these three scientists were awarded the Nobel Prize for, but also the kind of experiments that are happening in my lab and in a lot of other labs at the University of Wisconsin and a lot of other research institutions, of course. But I should say that the University of Wisconsin is actually a very special place. There's a lot of quantum science research going on here and a lot of these different technologies that we're talking about. And the other thing is that there's a lot of people doing that research. There's graduate students and undergraduates and postdoctoral researchers and faculty that are all involved in this work. And some of these scientists who just won the Nobel Prize, like Alain Aspect, for example, he won for his graduate research. So I just like to encourage all of your listeners, and especially people who are interested in science, that, you know, you can all really get involved. And it's people who are doing this.
And maybe you someday, too, can prove Albert Einstein wrong.
Well, actually, we're using these clocks to test relativity. And so we recently did a measurement where we proved him right about something. Einstein was right about a lot of things, but he was just wrong about a few things.
Well, he just could not understand. What was his saying? Something about God doesn't roll the dice or something like that?
Yeah, that's right. He famously said God doesn't play with dice because he was really bothered about the fact that quantum mechanics is fundamentally random or non-deterministic. There's a story that Niels Bohr, one of the other sort of founders of quantum mechanics, famously told Einstein in response, don't tell God what to do.
Shimon, we're out of time, but I thank you for joining us this afternoon.
Thanks a lot. It was my pleasure.
Shimon Kolkowitz, Associate Professor of Physics at UW-Madison, where the quantum physics are happening. He's an experimental quantum scientist who studies practical applications of quantum mechanics, and he talked to us about the science behind the most recent Nobel Prize in Physics.